to Straight Talk with MJ. I'm your host, Michelle Jeanette, and today is June 16th. Day's going by fast. Today, we're going to get right into a wonderful discussion that I had with retired Staff Sergeant Warren Broomer and his wife, Roberta. And they are friends of my family, and they are getting involved on the local level, and we talk about his military career and what they're doing on the local level in South Carolina. And I just wanted to bring their testimony and their story to you guys, because every testimony helps. It courage begets courage. And their story can hopefully inspire you to get involved locally. And we'll listen to this interview. I also have it as video. If you want to see the video, I will put the link in the podcast website info. It's also on my webpage, straighttalkwithmj.net. As soon as you go on the homepage, right there at the top, the interview is right there. You can click on that and watch it. And I encourage you to do that. Get inspired. Get involved locally. It's going to be up to us. As soon as this interview is over, I will do a quick little history story for the ending, since we went pretty long today, about an hour. But we had a lot of great talking points, things to talk about. So I hope you enjoy that interview, and we'll touch base with you after with a history story for today. All right. Today I have Staff Sergeant Warren and Broomer and his wife, Roberta. And I'm going to say they served 22 years in the Army. I know how the family goes. He's a retired, retired disabled veteran. He did combat service in, Operation Just Cause, Operation Desert Storm, and Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. He has served with the 101st Airborne Division, the 10th Mountain Division, the 25th Infantry Division, and the 3rd Armored Division, and he is a Bronze Star Medal recipient. That is a very impressive Army military career, sir. Sergeant, I'm sorry. I am very excited to have you and Miss Roberta on today to talk about a bunch of things, but really how you're getting involved locally is what we're going to end up at. So tell me about a little bit about your time in the military and kind of what led you to where you are now.
Well, it's I spent 22 years in, as I said, I'm a combination of the Cold War soldier, the Gulf War soldier, and then modern day war on terrorism soldier. I served in 101st, was there on the deployment to Desert Storm and Desert Shield. I left active duty in 93 and pursued ministry. My wife and I were in ministry, founded a church, spent time there. And then while I was in ministry, I was praying about the 13 years that I served and left on the table. Mm-hmm. So, and I believe this is really God. I picked up the phone and I called a recruiter. His name is Sergeant Gorman, still remember him. And he said, Sergeant Broomer, we'd love to have you back. And matter of fact, we formed a new intelligence unit. We want you to be a part of it. So was I 40 years old?
Close to.
Yeah, 40, 41. I I go to a unit I go through my physical, pass my physical.
35.
And after that, I'm in the Army a year after that, right? 2 years after that. We have the Twin Towers hit.
Because of 9/11, then he went to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Or did a year in Afghanistan and stayed in until retirement of 22 years in the National, retired in the National Guard, mm-hmm. 22 years.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And we met while he was in the military.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met him when he had just his first duty sign.
Ah.
Yeah. 41. At Fort Campbell, Kentucky, 41 years ago.
Fort Campbell's where I graduated high school.
Did you? My brother graduated high school from Fort Campbell High, and I went there into the 10th grade, and my father moved me to Clarksville.
Well, we were stationed at Fort Campbell, but I graduated at Montgomery County or Montgomery Christian Academy.
Oh, right there. I taught there.
Yeah. Really? Yes, you did?
With Miss Taylor, the president?
I don't remember. I was the only graduate because it was the first year they had the school. And so they only went.
Was there that awesome math teacher?
Yeah. Well,
she has another Christian school.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
I taught both of those Christian schools when I was there.
That is crazy. Small world.
Yeah,
I didn't
know that.
Yeah, that's funny. So when you got out of the military and did you go back into ministry?
Yes. So we did. My wife and I were pastoring a church, Reconciliation Christian Church, in Clarksville, Tennessee. Pastored that for
14 years.
And then we had a meeting with a gentleman named Scott McCloud, and we helped produce and helped work with
Thunder School.
And
that's where we met your parents.
Right. So Thunder School was launched on 777.
Huh.
It was the school for evangelism and worship. And Roberta and I directed that school for the first semester of the school.
Oh, okay.
So we spent some time there. Also, we spent time in Pigeon Forge in Sevierville, served at a large church there, and started a biblical counseling center there. And because of Roberta's father and his health issue, we had to come back to Clarksville. And then from Clarksville, we came to South Carolina.
Yeah.
It's our place of peace.
Yeah. And my sister's there, so
Maria Beach. Yes, I've spent some time with her.
Oh, good. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's real good. So now, my mom, you know, met with you guys a little while back, and she's like, oh, he's the something with the something. I'm like, huh? She was like, something with the GOP or something. I'm like, she's like, you know what you've been trying to do and everything. I was like, okay. It sounds like really cool that I want to, you know, talk to them, because it is important, because like we hear both on Steve Bannon, when you hear other people doing it, especially when it's people you know, and it really inspires you and gives you courage to go and step out and do stuff. And I know my husband and I, because of watching Steve Bannon and some other reasons that are going on, we were like, okay, we don't have kids in school, but why don't we just start by going to a school board meeting and see what happens? And the first thing we did was we happened to just catch the every 2 years where they reelect the chair, GOP chair. We happened to catch that
reorg meeting.
Yes. Yes. So we happened to catch that meeting. And so we were there when they elected all the new leaders and stuff. So, and then we went to another meeting. So it was just kind of showing up, seeing who's there and trying to get involved. And I actually did ask about the precinct committeemen here. And they said, because we're so small, I think there's 58,000 people in our county, they don't really do precincts or something like that. And I was like, okay. Yeah. But I didn't understand it all, so I'm trying to still learn everything. So what we're trying to do is just get involved in the party itself and try to, you know, I don't know yet. We're still moving forward. So how did that work for you guys? And what, you know, what got you interested? Or I guess going back to a good place to start would be, you know, conservatism. How does that play into what you're doing now with as being involved and everything? And the election last year and everything.
Just to say this to you, it goes all the way back to when we were in Tennessee pastoring. Warren was on the school board there for 4 years in Clarksville.
Oh.
4 or 5 years. So we've always believed in being involved and being a part of our community.
Yeah. If you are in ministry, you pastor church, whatever your role is in ministry, not to be involved in your community is not shepherding the people well.
Yeah.
And so for someone who is a believer, they should be attending school board meetings. They should attend the county meetings to hear what is happening, because those people are charged with your welfare and well-being.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like Reverse F, yeah, we have been, if you want to use the word, socially activated all the way back to when my daughter was in Kenwood Elementary School and I was a PTA president.
Yeah.
And then I became the PTA when she went to fifth grade at that school.
Right.
So
and our daughter is 30.
And she's 32 now.
Yeah. So
that was way back then. And then even involved when our son was in school, high school, and our other daughter. So we've always been activists
and actively
involved in what's happening in the community, because we believe in our faith has a part to do with what is happening in our community. So that just kind of followed us here. Well, we were here in South Carolina and North Myrtle Beach for about 7 years, and we really didn't get involved in much at all.
Other than we voted every year.
Yeah,
right.
Attended, you know, our local fellowship. Yeah,
and pastored, helped pastor a ministry here to get, you know, the know-all.
Yeah, and so... This last election, really up the ante.
Shifted how things work out.
And so, Dan Schultz from PrecinctStrategy.com was doing interviews on the Steve Bannon show. Had him consistently on. I kept hearing it. And, you know, the mantra there, or the saying there, is action, action, action.
Yes, yes.
Be a force multiplier. And so what we did, talked to Roberta, we watched it. My first response was to email the GOP chairman for our county. So I had to access her through... Facebook Messenger.
Right.
And I sent an email and I didn't get any response for days. Sent another one, didn't get any response. So then I remember what Dan Schultz said. He says, send me an email if you have a problem with your GOP president.
Uh-huh.
So I did. I sent him an email, tell him my name, told him, you know, what my desire was. Well, I got an instant message back from the GOP president and told me about an up and coming meeting. And so Roberta and I attended the meeting. We became members of the GOP party.
Yes, we did not until then.
Yeah. And it was at that meeting we met the president. And it was at that meeting that people were very upset one way or another concerning issues in the GOP. So let me say this. Dan Schultz said this, and I see it. We've walked through the process. He said this. He said that you're going to come up against people who will hide things from you because they don't want you to be a part.
Yeah.
They will take your money, but they don't want you physically involved in making decisions. And here's the truth about the precinct committee. The precinct committee man is the party.
Yeah.
They are the party. And you cannot make changes or influence changes if you're not in that role and being active.
Right.
So Roberta and I looked at that and said, look, November the 3rd was a complete disaster. We believe that the party that we supported, the Conservative Party, went to sleep. Mm-hmm. And we found out that it was a little bit more than going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that was intentional. And so we said, we have to do something. Because it affects us and it affects our grandchildren and our children.
Right.
So that's like a clarion call for us.
Yes.
You know, and we believe that.
Because of America first.
Yeah.
And that we speak up and be a voice in whichever way we can to make a difference. And so that was the thing where Warren really had a passion, and his heart is a passion. It's always been for government, but especially the way things have gone down, like he said, he was compelled to really, we were to be involved. And so going to the meeting and then to the precinct meeting, the org, the reorg.
Yeah.
That was where we went to the reorg. And it was so funny. We just knew greener than green going in there. And sitting at the table that represented the precinct that we live in. And so
yeah, that was pretty prophetic.
Yes, that was prophetic. I mean, and sitting there and we listened to everything going on. Now, Warren had silently shared with me, I'd like to be the committeeman. I'd like to be the precinct committeeman. He had talked about that. I think I'll, you know, put in my hat.
That was my intention.
For that, when we went there.
Nothing else.
Well, like I said, we were green. We had no idea what to expect. And everyone, you know, the people there had, they're prepared to run. They had their sheets prepared with the speak and the say. And we're like, okay. So we're in our little, our precinct. And I just said to Warren, I said, let's just let it play out because, you know, they might know a little more than what we know.
Yeah.
And so we're here. So we're going to just learn. And so he said, okay. And we were sitting at the table. So they had to choose a president, a vice president, secretary, treasurer, and then the committeeman, precinct committeeman. And there was a gentleman, wonderful, that he really knew it, had a passion for things and understood what that position, what it entitled and what it meant. And so we just all decided there, about 10 of us, to support him, choose him.
Yeah.
And there was a lady sitting in front of us. She's now our secretary, Angela. She said, I think you, and pointed to Warren, would be great as the president. I just feel this. I just sense this. And we're like, okay. So that is how that all happened at that meeting that caused us to go to the state.
And so at that meeting, the reorg, you have to elect your delegates.
Yeah. Oh.
And the delegates are the ones who goes to your state convention. To elect your president for the GOP of the state.
So
what happens a lot of times is, I'm sure you're familiar with Lynn Wood.
Yes.
Lynn Wood came to South Carolina to run against John McKissick, who is the GOP. He was, Donald Trump had supported him twice. But McKissick, in a lot of the people's belief, is the old GOP. It's not
established.
The American first.
Yeah.
And so Lynn is someone who believed very much that that needs to change. And there was a very intense debate in the voting process, and even here in Horry County.
Yeah.
So we're finding out that, if you want to use the word spiritual warfare, Michelle, you can. But we're finding out that the government that people believe that Thomas Jefferson and the founders gave us is not the government that we are experiencing today.
No, it's in both parties.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most disappointing thing out of it all. And
so Warren was the president, and what happened was our precinct committeeman ran for the position of.
So in all of that.
Yeah, I want to give her a step by step.
Okay, in all. We had Roger Slay, who's a very good guy. He is his passion is child trafficking. He spoke and said how Myrtle Beach is one of the main center hubs of child trafficking.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's a powder keg. I mean, he goes to politicians and he asks, "What are you doing?" They have no clue. And so he ran on that ticket to be the Horry County GOP president, our campus president. He won. He's out of our district.
Yeah.
So it's called the law of secession. So when he took the president of GOP for Horry County, I became the EC.
I got you.
I became the EC because I was the president already. So, we find out it's not what we believe it is a lot of times. And unless you are involved in the local politics and you're involved in making decisions, a lot of decisions you think that you're making through casting a vote for a person does not come about at all.
Yeah, and I think it's what I've been, like you, extremely disappointed in the Republican Party leaders. Maybe not necessarily those closest to the people at the state level, but, they get up there and promise and say all these things, and then you don't hear from them. I hear a few people like Governor DeSantis. He's really going after it and being proactive and pushing back on this, things like critical race and the mask and the vaccine passports and, all that, and pushing.
So how all that's driven is by your local party.
Right.
So when you hear him speaking, the local GOP, the committeemen, the presidents, they're all, and you have a state EC who is the voice to the governor, right? So those, when you hear DeSantis come out and speak about those different things, those are all coming from the people, the local people. And that's the disconnect sometimes. We don't see it. When you see politicians just saying whatever they want to say, the Republicans in that county or that city or that state, they're not connected to him or her.
Right.
And the connected piece to him and her is the precinct committeeman.
Okay.
And he and she is the connection to the governor. And so we drive the governor. We really are the party. And the conservatives have done a great disservice because they have kept out people by hiding this. And this guy, Dan Schultz, started to open up the door. You were saying in your county that you have a small county. No. We don't have, that's not, you can organize a precinct. There is a precinct. And here's the thing about it. I absolutely love it. If you and your husband said, I'm organizing it, guess who's the PC and guess who's the president and the secretary? You are all those. So you can be that today. There is no, they do it every 2 years. That doesn't mean that you cannot organize precincts in between those 2 years. Mm-hmm. We can get off this podcast right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to precinct strategies.
Mm-hmm.
You look up what your county is, who's responsible for what, and then you can call a meeting, and you can be the precinct committeeman for your county, and your husband can be the president and the secretary and all, because it size doesn't matter.
Okay. That's why I was a little, I was like.
There was just one person that showed up at their precinct. So they
were everything.
And they took that position and everything else into others so they could get others involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that. So I would employ you. In fact, I was looking up the information of someone that's so awesome I want to connect you to.
Mm-hmm.
She's here and you might have heard of her, Beans. Oh, she goes by Bean. And, let me get her information.
She's our state EC.
Yeah.
She's also very close with General Flynn. We've had General Flynn down here, and he spoke, and it was a great. We had a really great time at rally. She is a deplorable.
Yeah.
She was the one that organized with Rand Paul several years ago on the floor to have Rand Paul be on the debate stage. That was with Romney So she would be great. I mean, she said, I was a young pup then, but she has a website. It's called...
and she's even been on the war room.
She has a website called DC Undercover DC.
Oh, yeah. I follow that on Telegram.
Her kid was on my grandson's, I coached in baseball, great family. Oh. She can bring it like no one else can bring it.
Yeah,
she understands the populist national movement.
Yeah.
Major.
I know she'd do a podcast with you.
Okay.
I know she would. You would really enjoy it and have her talk about those things.
She's very knowledgeable.
She is connected to the president, President McKissick, to GOP. So there is this, in South Carolina, you have this new wave of new people that are changing the narrative of what we believe conservatism is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the donor class. Right. It's the working class.
Right.
It really always has been, because it's the working class that bears all the problems in the front of it.
And her name is Tracy Diaz.
Tracy Diaz.
And she goes by Beans. In fact, I could call her and she would be glad to even just give a shout out to you if you needed that right now. I mean, she's just, you're talking about on fire. And she would give you some information. Yeah. She's been doing this. She's at the government, that, you know, the head level.
Right.
The young state. But she's,
that's awesome. So that keeps you pretty busy. Yeah, because I think a lot of people don't even understand what precinct committeemen, that's the first time I had heard of it, was watching Steve Bannon,
it's been the best kept secret of the Republican Party.
Isn't that terrible?
Where Robert and I live at, here in North Myrtle Beach, Horry County, it is what you would say, there's a lot of retirees here. Some of them are retired police officers, sheriffs, lawyers, business owners. A lot of money is generated through Horry County, a lot of money. And so these are the people that the Republican Party continually goes after. It becomes a donor base that they rely on. And so when they, the Republican Party really, in my opinion, they do not want the local working guy or gal at their meetings making decisions. And I think President Trump has changed a whole lot of that. We see it happening. See it happening here in South Carolina.
Yeah,
it's a best kept secret. But there are, Dan Schultz said, in any given year, you could have more than 200 to 300 precinct committee men missing. There's not someone signed up. So what happens is the agenda goes up, it's voted on one particular side of the people, and then it goes up and say, why did we get that? Well, you got that because you had no representation. Your precinct committee man is the one that drives the bus to bring change in your community.
Well, and the last meeting we went to, there were several GOP county chairs that came from surrounding counties and came to the meeting. And one in particular was talking about, he was from Middle Tennessee. And so they drove a couple of hours to come to the meeting, this big meeting. We had about 80 people at it. But he was talking about, even in Tennessee, we tend to get, I think, complacent. Because we're fairly conservative. I mean, 70%, something like that. Yeah. And in most places, except for a couple of the bigger cities. And he was talking about, in his county, even, they were looking at the voting machines and they were having people at the state level removing people at the county level, because the county level people were asking questions about the voting machines.
Exactly.
And
the county level, again, that's where it all happens.
Yeah.
Interesting thing about Tennessee, and I said this to Roberta, Tennessee, and I remember your dad saying this, it was pretty interesting. I said, There was a word several years ago about Tennessee being the belt buckle of the South. It's mm-hmm. the one that's going to hold back everything. It is. Tennessee is a state that is changing rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, you guys seem like you're inundated with a lot of Northern philosophy. I mean, all the way through the universities. And that's a whole nother, that would be an interesting subject.
Yeah. They are moving down here a lot, yeah.
So you have a lot of these influx of people moving to the South because of the tax breaks, mm-hmm. because of the nice weather, wonderful health and all this. So they move there. So once they move there, they become involved in politics. And so a state that would normally be red flips overnight.
Georgia.
And everyone's scratching their head saying, what just happened?
Yeah.
How did Georgia turn blue? What just happened? Well, what happened was not only the cheating,
right.
What happened was you have inundated Northern folks moving towards the South to change the demographic so that, again, the party that usually wins on that is usually a Democratic Party.
Yeah, because they go to those cities.
Yeah.
A lot of them do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had neighbors that came from Illinois, basically for the, not just the weather, because obviously the winters, but the taxes mm-hmm. and everything. But so I'm going to flip really quick before we
sure.
jump off here on the letter. And I had, I think I can do this while we're, yeah, I think I can do this. I think I opened it. Here it is. I don't know. Can you see that?
No screen share. Yeah, I got it.
Okay. So open letter from retired generals. This was back last month, I believe.
Yeah.
May, beginning of May. Yeah. And basically, I'm not going to read all of it, but it was just an open letter from the senior military leaders. And wow, it's up to 317 retired. Oh, the first letter during the election was 317 retired. This one, I believe, is over 150. And that was a couple weeks ago, so I'm sure there's more now. But they, they're talking about this, they're coming together, which was awesome because they see what's happening coming down the pike with China, with critical security of our republic, First Amendment of the Constitution, censoring speech. They don't want to reengage in their Iran nuclear deal. A whole list of things that they're talking about, even so much as the infiltration of the Marxist ideology, cultural Marxism, and really what they're labeling, like yesterday with our Attorney General coming out and saying the biggest threat to the U.S. right now is white supremacy and domestic terrorists, and how they're trying to, purge the military of this kind of thinking. And we were talking earlier about Colonel Lohmeyer, and, I've got that book, and it's fantastic book. So what do you see happening, with this? You're familiar with the letter. Do you have experience, because you still have connections with the military, and how important that is that we stop that?
Well, to begin with, there's really no doubt in my mind, in my friend's mind, that Communist Chinese Party is our major threat to us as a country.
Right.
Xing in China, this whole vision is the 100-year vision of displacing the Western world because of their loss, right? They feel like they're the ones that should lead the world. And it's happening in small pieces. Our military is under threat because if they can have our young men and women believe that America is a racist country and that there's no redeeming value to us, then that will absolutely sap the fighting spirit from them.
Mm-hmm.
If you are white and you serve in the armed forces, this is the topic. You are a racist. Right. There's no redeeming value to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to start to propagate that and sell that to these young soldiers. Now, here's the other thing I think sometimes is missing all this, and these generals are absolutely right. It is a Marxist. It is the Marxist regime. If you look at our education system, elementary, middle to high school, you look at who's teaching our children, right? That's why there's the big push and movement now towards more homeschooling. And through this pandemic, I think that's it's going to increase.
Yes.
The thing that public schools hate is school choice. Right? Yeah. They don't like that. Because that means it gives the parents the opportunity to educate their child in a different way in a private area. The school system is the ground to where Marxist ideology and theology is brought into them. That stays with these young men and women, middle school, elementary, middle school, and high school. You ask a high school teacher, what does she teach about history? What does she teach about history? They don't really teach history anymore.
Mm-mm.
They don't teach civics anymore.
Mm-mm.
What they teach is whatever is current,
right?
And so what these generals are seeing, from my perspective, they're seeing a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is eroding our country's patriotism to the point that you could have staff officers, graduates of our military university, West Point, right? The Navy Academy, where these men and women will take over units of men and women who have to give their life to this country, but in their mind, they hate this country.
Yeah.
For me, as a retiree, that scares me, because those men and women who are leading men and women, that's very, very dangerous. And the exposure of this is, I mean, the letter's one thing. There has been several audio taped messages that commanders have given to their troops about the inadequacy of our country to address racism.
Mm.
And saying, and this is a white officer saying this, he was going by a pseudonym on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had tagged him and said, wait a minute, that's Colonel. Colonel.
Mm.
Right? Colonel was saying. So that Michelle, I think is, and what also bothers me is that the Conservative Party, Republicans, are again, it's crickets.
Yeah.
It's our government's come to the place that it seems like the intelligence community has been weaponized against a citizen.
Yes.
So you have the Attorney General threatening the audit in Arizona.
Yes.
That is Stasi Nazi Marxist communication. That should never happen, because the Constitution grants the rights of all American citizens. One of the strongest parts of the Constitution is states' rights.
Yes.
The rights that the rights that the elected officials and the people that say can govern themselves.
Yeah.
And this is a hard thing for federal to understand, independently of the federal.
Yeah. And they're targeting, I mean, they're holding people in the D.C. jail with no bail. And there's like at least 3, 4, or 5 dozen people still 23-hour-a-day solitary confinement. I mean, completely going against anything constitutional. And for what?
And for only walking through a gate.
Mostly misdemeanors. Yeah.
Right. If you get a chance, I think Dan Beatty is his name. He's one of the first doctors from Duke University who endorsed Donald Trump 2015-2016.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a new site called Revolver.com. He's already posted 2 explosive stories about that. These men and women that are locked up right now should have been free.
Yeah.
And our government is acting like it's a communist state. And again, our Republicans in the Senate and the House, they are quiet.
Yeah.
They they want to know, ask people, you want to know why we got Donald Trump? I said, it's not hard, really.
No.
It really is not hard to think about.
Mm-mm.
We got tired of losing, right? we got tired of losing, and we got tired of American values being stomped on by the people that we pay to represent us in Washington, D.C.
They'd go up there and not do what they got voted to do.
Right.
And they were not fighting for our values. They were quiet. And so that's why Trump was elected, because he was a voice for people that couldn't speak out.
Right.
Yeah.
He understood that. And I, November, look, I don't think there was going to be any peace in our country until we get to the bottom of November 3rd and also 1-6.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that they're both of them connected.
Yeah.
Where you have Putin, who has made a mockery of our foreign policy with our leaders. And you have, Blinken, who sat with the Chinese, and the Chinese berated him for an hour and a half. He said nothing. There is no such thing in my mind of a managed decline of America.
Yeah.
But there are people leading our country right now. They strongly believe that we have to take our up and comings, and then the whole world be better. And what they don't realize is that the whole world is better is because we are here.
Yeah.
And that's the tragedy of it all. And we're teaching now our children that we are bad people because we have done something 300 years ago or 200 years ago.
Right.
And we still need to pay penance for that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's why I love taking the Constitution class with Patriot Academy and Wall Builders. I mean, I always loved history, but taking that class, I learned a whole lot more things than I've ever learned. And I've ordered a bunch of their books. I got their Founders Bible, which is fantastic, full of information and about our history. And because we don't know, and as citizens, we don't know, that's why they said that this constitutional republic would never work without a moral, religious, and knowledgeable citizen.
Right.
And if you don't have all those three things working in your citizenry, it's going to collapse. And we're watching that.
And if you know, you're right, Roberta, and I was listening to this morning, Steve Bannon, and they had a gentleman, Jordan, his name is, he'd be a great one to have on too, Bernard Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And he represents Black Americans for a Better Future.
Oh, okay.
He's out of Atlanta. And he was, him and Steve were talking about the nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that, look, and Steve Bannon said this, is they want to get rid of the nuclear. They want to deregulate or pull the nuclear family down.
Mm-hmm.
So that again,
for the African American, therefore for the African American, therefore then we become again dependent, and that's what the CRT does. It's saying, let's change things that work. No, or is everything correct, or is everything right towards Black people? Or no, we know that, we've seen things, but I don't want to go back. For me, CRT, in my opinion, takes me back to being dependent. And just like this gentleman was sharing today, what it does is tears up the nuclear family, so that we are no longer the strength. Where's the man in the home? That we become dependent on the system. We say everything. The advances that we have had in the past are no longer, they're not valuable, which I believe the advances are great. Is there things that I think we can still shift and change? And yes, of course. But to rewrite history in the way that they're wanting it to be done, I don't agree.
Right.
You know, because it's going to shift everything. It shifts the narrative of who I am. Then I'm no longer. Then it even changes who you are as a Caucasian. It says, then you need to make penance to me.
Right.
yes, there are things that need to be rectified, and I won't ever stand against that because I believe in that. There are mm-hmm. things that do need to be put in right in a right way, but I don't need you to bow to me
mm-hmm.
because it takes away then who I am, because it still says then I am not valuable
mm-hmm.
or I'm not the person who I have become because I need you to validate me.
Right.
And so they can't see that. That what you don't see in that is you're taking away who I am or the progress I've made or the progress my father has made. Both of our fathers are retired military
mm-hmm.
engineers.
Yeah. That's good.
And so all yeah. the progress that were made, all the things I grew up through, all the things that I learned how to become strong, how to stand, then you'll take that from me. And so I'm not down with that, me losing my identity.
I think one of the things that is probably real apparent is that we're at a culture war, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can create tension,
mm-hmm. and that's what it is.
You can create tension where there was no tension before. Then all of a sudden you can start bringing, you can resurrect the dead, right?
Yeah.
You can bring back that old stuff and then say, we never solved it. But the reality is we're the only country, and I say this all the time. I told this at the meeting the other day. We're the only country in the world, literally in the world, that has a set of documents
mm-hmm.
that was ratified, the 13th, the 14th Amendment, that actually addresses racial issues in our country,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. We're the only country that we're able to do that.
Yeah.
And the gains that minorities have made in America has been substantial.
Yes, they are gains.
And we don't celebrate those in the right way.
No, uh-uh.
And that's part of the education system.
We live here in South Carolina, and I want to tell you, I am so impressed with my grandson's education at the elementary level, at mm-hmm. ODE Elementary School. I have, his fourth grade and fifth grade, been so impressed with his social studies teacher because they have taught history.
Okay, that's good.
They have taught the history of South Carolina. They have taught the history of the United States in a way that he took such pride in who he is.
Yeah.
It talked about the gains that the African Americans, because that is who came and built the country, the South.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about the gains, and they talked about all of the benefits that they brought to this country,
mm-hmm.
how they were the, because of the skill level.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was taught in such a positive way. It wasn't held back. They taught history fourth grade and in fifth grade. And even in fifth grade, the teaching of the Holocaust.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, phenomenal. I give kudos to South Carolina here in Horry County School System. I've been so impressed with how they have taught history that we've not heard taught in other places.
Yeah.
On a level that for kids that young.
And that, again, comes from the parents and the people,
yeah.
putting the right people in the system and on the school board and all that. That's yeah, why you were talking about, started off saying, you know, it's critical. So to kind of wrap up, what would your message be? Because I hear people sometimes, well, Christians are just supposed to share God's love and the gospel and don't really get into all that dirty politics stuff because, you know, we're just supposed to love people. And obviously that's part of, you know, big part of who we are as Christians. But part of the reason we're in the shape we're in now is because so many of us didn't get involved at a civic level, a community level. You know, maybe our pastor did and we just left it up to our pastor or something, but, you know, we didn't get involved with community. And what would your message be to Christians of how, you know, what the importance of getting involved with your civics to make a difference and get this train back on track.
Okay. Can I, something else I wanted to add
sure.
them to what I had shared with you about the South Carolina school system.
Yeah.
Let me talk about South Carolina as a whole. Even what happened in many years ago with at the church shooting.
Okay.
The entire state from the state level came down to Charleston. And as a whole people, black, white, racist, they marched calmly and peacefully and stood for justice and truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to say how I know that's possible, how I see that here, how the involvement was on every level
mm-hmm.
that brought the order and the structure in that,
mm-hmm.
that allowed there to be the peace that there was in Charleston, which could have been, I mean, that was tumultuous. That was, could have been a really bad. I mean, but to see the order that came from every level of everyone that's involved in different levels came together for the good
mm-hmm.
of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of what Warren was talking about, getting involved on every level.
So that's a great example. Sometimes people don't know the backstory. The backstory of that is that Nikki Haley, with a concerted effort, the time that she was governor, mm-hmm. reached out to the inner city communities and the leaders to get their information on what will take place. Because you remember, shortly before that, or 2 years before that, three, you had the young man mm-hmm. in, is it Detroit?
Mm-hmm.
Or that shot by the police officer, Officer Wilson. And of course, they found out it was different. And then, but she took that and she took lessons learned from that. She brought it back to South Carolina. And then she began to engage in her community, right? Mm-hmm. She engaged the people of faith in her community, mm-hmm. and they spent time together. So when that tragedy happened, where the police officers shot the young black man in the back, and they tried to cover up, when that happened. There was already this social and spiritual network in place that says, look, we live here. We're not going to tear our city apart when we can address this as people and prayer. Mm-hmm. And even when the shooting at mm-hmm. the AME Church, that one as well, because there were two major things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The city was already entwined. The governor, the mayor, everyone was working together. That's a great example of how people of faith can be, when they're engaged in a community, change can happen.
Yeah.
Michelle, one thing we, as believers, one thing we don't recognize is the gift of the Holy Spirit that we have inside of us. It gives us power
mm-hmm.
to see and to overcome
mm-hmm.
those adversities that we face every day. And so when we take people of faith, right, and you interject them into the community, into politics, the lenses that they see through are not the same as everybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Because our vision has already been granted through biblical understanding of the times. Yeah.
And the only thing that's going to shift that is prayer.
Yeah.
It is just got to really be a massive prayer and then action. We do a lot of praying, but where's the action?
Yeah.
And so this is a part where we see for us is getting involved on that level is action. Where can I be a voice at? What can I speak into? How can I represent my community? And
so
number one, it's prayer, and then it takes action.
There's I'm going to leave with this because I wrote this down. I caught this this article a while ago, and it's a writing. It says this about the church and government. It says that the church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state.
Yes.
It must be guided and the critic of the state and never be its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority.
Mm.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., A Knock at Midnight, June 11, 1967.
That is it.
Yeah.
So this is where we're at. He says not, it's action, action, action. We have to be the prophetic voice.
Mm-hmm.
We can pray, but we do not, and it's no good. It's like Reverend Dr. Cho said this. He said, it's funny about America. He said, America has written thousands of books of prayer, but there's no change.
No,
he wasn't being facetious, but he was just saying.
Yeah.
And of course, he's the one that penned the revival in Florida. He prophesied the revival, but he said, "Look, you write books, but you don't pray.
Faith without works."
So
yeah.
So you getting involved, and everyone that gets involved makes the difference.
Yeah.
Because even your voice, Michelle, in that region where you and your husband getting involved.
Yeah.
And saying, "Wait a minute. We see value in this, and we're going to push until something happens."
Yeah, yeah.
That makes a difference. You become that voice, even for the voice of us being aware of having things like the critical race theory being taught the way it is being taught, and just tearing down everything that's been built up.
And even in the church. Some churches are woke, this, and it's like, no.
I've said it many times. I love the church.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I love the people. I love the body of Christ. But when I hear what I don't hear, that bothers me. As a minister of the gospel myself, teaching the word of God, it bothers me because what I'm hearing is get everybody saved, do charitable deeds, and man, people are just going to love you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not it. If the pastors and spiritual leaders are not engaged in their community, they are failing their parishioners. They're failing them.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Judges 2:10. I always love this scripture. Judges 2:10 says this. After that generation died, another generation grew up who did not acknowledge the Lord or remember the mighty things he had done for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
After that, there was a generation that did not know the United States and the men and women who died to preserve this great republic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where we're at.
That's it. That's grievous.
That's where we're at. Because we have men and women. Look, when you have a evangelism conference and you have quote unquote spiritual leaders who come on the stage with a BLM t-shirt, that said everything about the church.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there it is, Roberta. Now, not saying that, now I'm separated too. I'm talking about the organization.
Yes,
because you know if it starts on a lie, then everything else after that's a lie, right? The foundation is not good.
Yes,
right.
But not the sentiment, not the mantra. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Not the sentiment. Yeah.
Right.
Obviously. Yeah.
Because that it is important.
Sure.
And this is something else, Michelle. I say this about our flag. My father, my husband, my family, my brothers, they all fought for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it has meaning to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told my grandsons, if they ever kneeled when the flag is being raised or we're pledging allegiance or our national anthem, I would walk out on the field and I would stand you up because you would be dishonoring
mm-hmm.
with the founding of this country. I got freedom through that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can keep going through our Constitution. I can go on and on and on mm-hmm. of what the flag represents. So I value, and our voice is America first.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why I want to get you guys. I have another guy that I'm going to try to get on from the one I was talking about earlier about the other county, and a couple other people. My dad has another connection I'm trying to get with them. But the more people we hear talk from all over, the more, like Steve likes to say, courage begets courage. And mm-hmm. you just, And it wakes you up to what's really going on all over. You can be in your little bubble and not think about what's happening outside your little world or community. And that's why if you don't go to these commission meetings, you go, oh, really? Is that going on? You know, that kind of thing. So
here's something I'm going to, Michelle, because we just, you, I don't know if you saw it today, but had a lady and she was there through a prayer network.
Yes.
North Carolina is doing this surveying of young kids, right? It's called the SEL, Social Emotional Learning.
And the schools are doing it.
And so the schools are doing it.
Without permission of the parent.
We just heard about that here locally, too.
Right. And so this is really another way of doing what did he call, Steve said it's another way of dealing with critical racism. And he said it's from a thing called Lives of Others, a Cultural Revolution. So this has always been what they're doing. They're changing the meaning of words.
Yes.
Right. They're changing the meaning.
But still giving you the same thing, what they want you to have.
So they're trying to accomplish the same thing by changing the meaning so that you're not, so if they say critical race theory, then you, oh, no, I'm not against that. But how about the social-emotional learning?
Yeah.
Right. So that's something that you, no doubt, especially as much as Tennessee is.
I think it decredits an individual, a child, and it tears them down.
It bypasses the mom.
And does what you were saying earlier about what they're trying to do to discredit the family.
And they say in North Carolina, these children, the parents cannot opt out of it. See, that's a violation.
So then what happens is we go back to, you have to homeschool, or you go to the Christian schools that I would hope is not teaching your theory.
Well, and they're getting them younger and younger.
I'm telling you, a Christian college is not a Christian college.
No, there's one here in Tennessee, Lipscomb, that invited I forget his name, Kendry or something, to come and speak. And I was like, what the heck? You know, it's just.
Vanderbilt University is going to have a new professor.
Yeah.
The critical race theory guy himself.
Yeah.
Was Dyson?
Yes.
I heard that's on hold. Yeah, he's at Vanderbilt.
It's definitely the education system has been coming at us strong. Well, I appreciate you guys talking with me. Maybe we can get together again and do, you know, keep up with each other.
If you'd like to.
I'll let you get together and talk with Warren. He's going to talk with
you. If you'd like to, maybe we can get a type of Zoom meeting.
Mm-hmm.
With probably some folks in my precinct, right? We can have Beans come
in. And I sent her a message. That's why I stepped away and asked her to contact you.
And our president, and then we can do a Zoom meeting, and you can ask questions. Because most of our committee got involved. Mm-hmm. Our whole committee of Precinct 2 got involved because of
what
Dan
happened?
Schultz.
Yeah.
Every one of our leaders are.
That's where we all came in.
So if you like it, we could do a Zoom meeting. You could do the whole thing, but I think you'll find our community pretty.
That would be awesome.
With Roger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really spending time with
if
Roger.
If you
with Beans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're very knowledgeable, and like Warren said, that's true. We just all came together.
Yeah. We were there because of the Dan Schultz thing. Why'd you get here, Dan Schultz? Why'd you get here, Dan Schultz? I want to make a difference, Dan.
Everybody says Warren.
That's awesome.
Last 2 years ago, we had at the Horry County GOP, the convention, we had like 120 people.
Uh-huh.
This year, we had 499 people. All because Dan Schultz.
Uh-huh. War room,
Steve Bannon. He's the man.
It's amazing. Yeah. So, anytime, because I'm very flexible on time, so if you guys want to get that, I would love to do that.
I'll send an email out to our chapter, our president, and Roger, and Roberta, you got Beans, and maybe we can get, because we can use the office at their
Because she
that is business.
You see, for the for the state, for Horry County.
Well, and to encourage you guys, I have another friend from my YWAM days again, and he, I can't remember which Central American country he was from, but he was our translator for our team, and he married American, and so they live in Texas. He's huge conservative guy, worked, they're working with a Hispanic, I can't remember the group name right now, something, Texas Coalition something, but it's a whole, it's a, Texas Minority Coalition or something like that. So he is getting with his leaders of that group, and we're going to try to do the same thing, do a Zoom call.
Oh, and, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so he's, you know, we're going to talk to basically the same thing, but encourage you guys, it's happening every state, you know. Yeah. And like, you know, watching the War Room, obviously, you know, with the Hispanic community, they kind of have, down there in McAllen, Texas, they had that whole county flip, you know, Republican. So
you heard about the one county down there, the, the city that elected their first Hispanic mayor.
Mayor, yeah.
And drove the other, came out of nowhere. He was a dark horse. Came out of nowhere. Bam, won it, just like that.
Yeah, so it is,
and
a great...
down in the border towns.
That's why they're trying to suppress the quote-unquote MAGA movement. And I think that's one thing that scared them. I'm just going to say this, my opinion, on January 6th, they saw what could happen when peaceful people, a million peaceful people came together. And yeah, the handful thing, what happened in the Capitol is separate. I in my opinion, because, you know, everybody else was out there peacefully standing there. And they saw how many people were for America, and they were like, wait a minute.
They they really were, because, again,
they don't,
the narrative has always been, see, they can stay in those ivory towers and make decisions, and then we have to eat it, right? And then there's no repercussion to them. They actually saw what the founders talked about dealing with the First and Second Amendment. The arms are there so that when the government that tries to be overbearing on you, you're supposed to be able to deal with an overbearing government. They don't like that. That's not twisted in the Constitution.
Nope.
And the First Amendment right, the right to come to their, come to the state to aggress egregiousness against people. That's what that was. That was the, that six was, you always got a bad guy in the, but that said First and Second Amendment all day long. And you're right. They thought that people's ignorance would not have allowed them to do what they did. And every one of them, with the exception of ones that violated going into the, you know, they were right.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys.
And well, we appreciate you and what you're doing. I mean, just your faithfulness and commitment to continue no matter the size. I remember when you first started listening to you, and I appreciate that. And, you know, be the voice, because our voice and people has been shut down.
Yeah.
And what is happening now, our voices are coming forth.
Yeah.
People are getting their heads out of the sand.
You
know, I thought about something I just want to encourage you, because you encourage us to say about, you know, the it's not only is the different people, but even for the races, for the, you know, the culture, to watch what was happening even in Maryland for that young lady named Kim Clatt, and she's been on Classic or War Room, her voice, and she's calling out what's not right.
Yeah.
And that's major, and that's big, and I hurrah people like that to stand for what's righteousness, justice, and truth.
Yep.
You know, for everybody. And so things are happening. When I saw her, that let me know things are happening.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Yes, we will keep in touch for sure. I'm sorry?
I said, okay, volunteer state.
Yeah, go Vols.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hold on.
You're just like your mom, girl. Just like her. Beautiful, just like your mom.
Thank you very much for coming. So I hope you really enjoyed that interview. A lot of great things that they're doing in their area of South Carolina. And I hope it inspires you to really just get involved wherever you are in your community, at the church level, at the civic level. It's up to us. It's up to us right now. I'm just going to read one short thing out of the Founder's Bible, one of my favorite sources. And it's from wallbuilders.com. If you want to get one, I highly suggest that you do. It's fantastic, full of historical information and how it relates to the Bible and the founding of our country. Pretty cool. So this one is called Freedom is a Fragile Thing. Perhaps we have lived with this miracle too long to be properly appreciative. Freedom is a fragile thing and is never more than one generation away from extinction. It is not ours by inheritance. It must be fought for and defended constantly by each generation, for it comes only once to a people. Those who have known freedom and then lost it have never known it again. Guess who said that? Yep, Ronald Reagan. When our pilgrim forefathers first stepped onto these shores, they were not carrying with them empty platitudes and mere lofty ideals. They were armed with a firm belief worth dying for and sacrificing all they had, that freedom, true freedom, was only possible not if one believed in the idea of self-government, but rather if a community was committed to the practice of it. Freedom begins inside the heart of man. It comes as a gift from God, both as an incredible privilege as well as a weighty responsibility. It cannot be coerced, but with courage must voluntarily be embraced and extended to all. But above all, for freedom to be enjoyed, it must be lived out. In that same inaugural address, Reagan reissued a profound warning. Quote, the deterioration of every government begins with the decay of the principle upon which it was founded. This is true today as it was when it was written in 1748, end quote. As such, while we are still able, may we restore the glorious foundations upon which this great nation was built. To our own peril, we ignore the self-evident truth found within our founding documents and the wisdom of the scriptures upon which they are based. The admonishment to the body of people gathered before him was this. With all the profound wording of the Constitution, probably the most meaningful words are the first three, we the people. Those of us here today who have been elected to constitutional office of legislative position are in that three-word phrase. We are of the people, chosen by them to see that no permanent structure of government ever encroaches on freedom or assumes a power beyond that freely granted by the people. It is inconceivable to me that anyone could accept this delegated authority without asking God's help. I pray that we who legislate and administer will be granted wisdom and strength beyond our own limited power, that with divine guidance, we can avoid easy expedients as we work to build a state where liberty under law and justice can triumph, where compassion can govern, and wherein the people can participate and prosper because of their government and not in spite of it. The path we will chart is not an easy one. It demands much of those chosen to govern, but also from those who did the choosing. And let there be no mistake about this. We have come to a crossroad, a time of decision. End quote. The question is then put to each one of us. What will you do with this precious gift of freedom that has been entrusted to you? We are at a crossroad again. And I think in this constitutional republic, it is the duty, especially of Christians, to be involved. Because if we're not involved, how do we expect good people and good government if we don't get involved? It's not going to naturally happen. The natural thing to do is to take power, which we see that happening now. That's the human nature of things. More power wants more power. It wants to keep that power. And they're fighting with all their might right now to keep that power. And so it's up to us, we the people, of this constitutional republic built upon biblical foundations, to do that, to do our part. So thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed this interview today, this discussion. And again, you can see this on my webpage, straighttalkwithmj.net. The video will be there. Share it with all your friends. Get involved. Share it with everyone you know. Talk about it with everyone you know. Get together. Do something. Get involved. Make a difference. And it will change. It will turn around. Thank you for listening. You can follow me on Gab and Telegram at Straight Talk with MJ. Love you guys. God bless. Talk again soon.